T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
The payoff pitch by Kimbrel. Fastball swing and a miss. Strike three. Cubs fans can get used to seeing this. A 1-2-3 inning by Craig Kimbrel closes out a victory for the I-Cubs.
Middays on the Score.
Last night, that is at Voice of Cohen. Alex Cohen on the call for the Iowa Cubs. And he joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. A tough loss for the Cubs last night, but they can be heartened by knowing they are getting the back end of their bullpen set shortly. Thanks for joining us again, Alex. How are you?
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. And I'm doing pretty well. It's been fairly chaotic for the Iowa Cubs over the last week, but all good chaos. And it's been a lot of fun watching Craig Kimbrel, especially last night. He looked really sharp.
And any signs that this was his last work in Iowa? A lot of speculation. You didn't see a private plane pull up to the ballpark or anything, right? Are you tracking taillights?
No, private plane that landed on the center field warning track or anything like that. But all indications, just reading what Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer and Joe Madden have said, that the light is at the end of the tunnel here for Craig Kimbrel, and his time with the Iowa Cubs is coming to a close, and going back up to Chicago. And just seeing him yesterday, the 1-2-3 inning and the first three outings he threw, Kimbrel looked sharp most of the time. He did give up one home run on Saturday when he pitched back-to-back, but he just seemed like he was comfortable with his body. He was ready to let it loose. His first four fastballs were 95 miles per hour, then he went 94, then he went 96. It was 95 the rest of the way. The first curveball he threw was to a right-handed hitter. It landed in the left-hand hitting batter's box, and the guy swung anyway. It was just nasty. And he looked like the Craig Kimbrel who has averaged 14.5 strikeouts for 9 innings over the course of his career. He looked sharp. 1-2-3 inning to finish a game. I think Cubs fans get used to seeing that.
And we're trying to figure out how this roster is going to look, especially because they just called up Tony Barnett, who at age 35 is sort of taking a flyer on a guy who can give him some stuff out of the bullpen. What did you see from him?
Tony, his second rehab stint with the Iowa Cubs, he threw 9 consecutive scoreless outings, 8 1/3 innings pitch, allowed 1 hit, 1 walk, and 1 hit by pitch. So 3 total base runners in 8 1/3 innings. It's pretty impressive. Tony, 35 years old. There were reports saying his fastball was 94 to 95. I saw more 92 to 93 with a couple of 94s. He throws a curveball, and Fangraphs calls it a slider. And then I looked a little bit more in depth and asked Tony. He was throwing more of a cutter during his second rehab stint with the I-Cubs, and it was really effective. Long, lanky, righty, deceptive delivery, has a pause and a pitch, kind of a miniature leg kick, too. Pretty deceptive. He's a guy that if you look at his Rangers numbers prior to coming to the Chicago Cubs organization, 2 of the 3 years he was with the Rangers, he was pretty darn good. So he's a guy who it's worth taking a flyer on him. But then again, you got Craig Kimbrel coming up, and it kind of puts the pieces of the puzzle to the back end of the bullpen together with Cishek and Brandon Kinsler in the seventh inning, Pedro Strop in the eighth inning, and then Craig Kimbrel the ninth, and then who knows with Brandon Morrow. So there's a lot of pieces to put together there, but Craig Kimbrel definitely solidifies the back end of the bullpen. And if he looked anything like he looked yesterday, and really throughout this entire stint, Cubs fans are going to be very happy.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you. See you in October.
The Cubs and a lot of organizations have used AAA pitchers a little bit differently over the last few years. Just the shuttle that happens, the depth that teams want to stock at AAA in terms of relievers, is it's getting deeper and deeper. Have you seen anything or heard anything from guys when they make their return, like after they get shuttled out of the big leagues, and maybe they're coming back, maybe they're not, that wears on them? Are guys acting differently after they've been moved back and forth than they used to, given the way that bullpens are being constructed and then deployed in this version of baseball?
Well, no, honestly, you hear a bunch of different things. I mean, every time a player, they go up to the big leagues, they come back down here, you go through a small variation of the 12 stages of grief. You go through denial, you go through anger, then you go through acceptance. And then you're able to come back down here, get to work. And for guys like Dylan Maples and Rowan Wick and James Norwood, they know that they're on the 40-man roster. They're either one injury away from being in the big leagues for a prolonged period of time or just being shuttled back and forth and contributing in a big way. So, of course, it's difficult. The difference, it's a stark contrast between AAA life and big league life, but they understand that they are one phone call away from being a solidified member of the Chicago Cubs bullpen. So just having that intrigue and that possibility of, you know, just being up there for the long haul, I think it's a driving factor of them coming down here and having a positive attitude.
What's the story with Danny Hultson? How real is this possibility? Because it really would be a hell of a story.
It really would. He's a guy who was drafted number two overall in 2011, and that's the best baseball draft probably over the last 20 years. He was a sandwich pick between Gerrit Cole and Trevor Bauer. He was taken before Francisco Lindor. He was taken before Javier Baez. He was taken before Blake Snell. I mean, he's taken before Jackie Bradley Jr. You go down the list of that draft, and it's just so impressive. And, you know, Danny, coming from Virginia, he was the best collegiate pitcher at that time. I remember seeing Danny Hultson in Huntsville, Alabama, 2012, 95-degree day, 10:35 in the morning, and he struck out 11 in 7 scoreless innings. And the catcher, I don't think, moved his glove more than 4 times that entire start. So just seeing him then, he's just a different pitcher. Now, he was out of baseball for a year and a half. He was a guy whose contract wasn't renewed with the Mariners, then out of baseball, got his degree back in Virginia, worked out with some of his college coaches, then changed his mechanics a little bit, actually got healthy for the first time in 5 years. And then yesterday, through school, was inning his last 2 fastballs, 95 and 96 miles per hour, one on the outer black, one inside on the hand. He looked really sharp. So is it a realistic possibility? I think so. I think it'll take a little bit of time. I think the Chicago Cubs want to see Danny go through his outings once every 2 days, once every 3 days, stay healthy, make sure the stuff sustains itself, and then they could talk about the next progression. But when you have a left-handed pitcher with his pedigree throwing 95, 96 miles per hour, you have to be interested.
When we talked a couple of weeks ago, Alex, we were pretty focused on Craig Kimbrell's first outing for the Iowa Cubs. We're also focused on where Ian Happ was at. We did not touch on Robel Garcia all that much, who's been playing second base and really well.
Did he homer again last night?
290.
He did. A 406-foot moonshot off our scoreboard in right center field. It was like a lob wedge for Tiger Woods.
This guy has really put it together, double A and triple A. The slugging percentage is up around 630 at both levels. He's 26. What else do you know about him, and how real is that swing?
He's the most interesting man in minor league baseball, or at least the Cubs organization. He was a guy who was signed out of the Dominican Republic. He was with the Cleveland Indians for 3 years, part of their organization, released out of High A in 2013. He spent 5 years in Italy. He was in Italy for 5 years. He married a woman from Italy. He was part of the Italian national team when they were preparing for international competition. A Cub scout was out there actually looking at somebody else. Now, the Cubs actually have another Italian pitcher, Luis Lugo, who's now in Double-A. They were more looking at him. They saw a switch hitter, Robel Garcia, who could hit the ball 400 feet from both sides, and that certainly piqued their interest. And Robel, since he's been here, I mean, that's what he's done. He's hit home runs from the right side, home runs from the left side. And they're not wall scrapers either. I mean, they are 400. Yep, yesterday it was 406. 2 days ago it was 434 feet. The guy has light tower power, both sides too. So that's been what's most impressive. You read some of the reports, where's he going to fit in defensively? He really struggles. I'll tell you what, he can play second base. He's a guy that he might not be a gold glove caliber defender, but if you're looking at the scale of 10 Javier Baez and 1 Daniel Murphy, he's probably a 4.5. A guy who can play second base. They've experimented with him at third base. He's taken fly balls in the outfield, played a couple games at first base, so he kind of fits that Joe Maddon mold. He can play multiple different positions, and the power is real, guys. He's a guy who right now gets around on any fastball and takes advantage of any mistake. Now, being here, I'd like to see him progress and fare a little bit better against off-speed pitches, but you know, right now it's a process for him. This is his first full season of minor league baseball since 2013. He sure played well.
What are players in that league and people around the league saying about the transition to the major league ball that's doing to AAA exactly what it's done to the big leagues?
They are shocked they didn't believe it until they saw it. I mean, if you come to a Triple-A baseball game, especially in the western part of the league, you'll see 8 home runs hit per game. You look at the Iowa Cubs home run stats, they have more home runs this year than they did all of last year. The iCubs leading home run hitter last year was David Bode. He had 13 home runs. Robel Garcia has 14 already. Trent Giambrone has 15. We're not even at the All-Star break. Donnie Dweez, his career high in home runs coming into this season was 10. He has 11 home runs already, and this is a guy who didn't project as a double-digit home run hitter, but he's a guy who's on pace right now for 18 home runs this year. So it is certainly a change. But for the pitchers, it actually helps them going from AAA to the big leagues because they're using the same baseball. They don't have to modify their grip or their release points. So I think for the pitchers that are on that taxi squad, who are up and down, who are 4A players, that helps them when they get up to the big leagues because you don't have to change anything up. Now, their stats might suffer a little bit in AAA, but once you get to the big leagues, there's no adjustment period. So I think it does help AAA hitters because obviously hitting the ball farther, more home runs, higher slugging percentage, higher OPS, but it also helps those pitchers that are on the cusp of making the big leagues, and when they get up there, there's no adjustment period.
Are you seeing any adjustment period then from double-A guys that go to triple-A? I mean, Robel Garcia hasn't seemingly had any issue with it, but have other guys kind of beefed about this new ball a little bit?
Yes. I mean, there is an adjustment period whenever a guy goes from double-A to triple-A because there is a huge difference in talent and just the way pitchers pitch in general. Now, double-A has widely been considered the prospect league. Now, you come up to the Pacific Coast League, and there's a bunch of 31, 32, 33, 35-year-olds, in some cases 36-year-olds, like Brian Dunsing was with us this year earlier, guys who know how to pitch. So there is a number of chatter and complaints about the difference between double-A and triple-A. The ball is one of them, but also just the level of play, and from a hitter, the way pitchers pitch, it just combines the issues.
I wonder what the response was around you when people read what Adam Eaton said about minor league baseball. And after spoke to a reporter who was examining the Washington Nationals AAA team and just looking at the difference and how hard it is for people to eat properly, to be able to just have a baseline level on which to compete. And Eaton's take was, well, you know, it's good for you. Otherwise, you get lazy. You know, if that weren't there for me, I probably wouldn't have worked as hard to get out of there. I mean, it's really tone-deaf stuff. And there are people across baseball firing back on Twitter, just calling Eaton an idiot and not really understanding what's going on and how unfair it is. I imagine those comments were not well received where you are.
The only lazy thing, sorry to interrupt, the only lazy thing part of that was his take. It was ill-informed. It was one that was based on his opinion. Great. He was motivated by the poor conditions which he was granted in when he was in AAA, when he was in AA, when he was in single-A. That is the exception mentality. That is certainly not the norm. So for him to go out there and say it and the first time he was interviewed express that as the way it should be based on his own particular instances, it was tough to read. Even from my perspective as a minor league broadcaster, I haven't talked to anybody in the clubhouse about that, but I can be sure that if I did, it wouldn't be suitable for radio material for FCC regulations. I would think they'd be pretty pissed off about that.
Alex, appreciate it. As always, great talking with you. Hopefully there's a call up soon. We can chat again.
Let's talk about it. Thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Say hi to Taylor Davis for us, please. That's our guy.
Yeah, we love him.
That is Alex Cohen. He is the voice of the iCubs. The stuff on Robel Garcia is really good.
Both sides of the plate power. That's fairly interesting.
And 5 years with Team Italy.
I do like that he appropriately placed the defensive scale, Javi Baez at the 10 and Daniel Murphy at the 1. If Dan Uggla was still playing, he'd be at
the 1. Stop invoking Dan Uggla.
Of the defensive spectrum, but he's no longer playing because he's very, very old. Some new details from Adrian Wojnarowski about Kevin Durant declining his $31.5 million player option that we can bring to you when we come back. Also, some quarterback conversation from one team that made a very surprising decision to the Bears. Also, I think we can bridge a gap a little bit.
This segment's brought to you by Arlington International. International Racecourse. They're off and running with live racing and entertainment at beautiful Arlington International Racecourse. Friday's Country Night, Saturday is Bacon, Beer, and Bloodies. Need they say more? Not for Connor. Visit arlingtonpark.com for details and VIP experiences. Kevin Durant has made a decision, and it is where he is making his decision that is raising some eyebrows. We're going to get to that and more next. Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
We do feel confident that he will, but Kawhi is his own man. You know, like he's shown us that since he came here. And he's a confident human being. He's an unbelievable person. He is his own person. I'm glad we got him for the year, because when I said this to you guys, that we have to be ourselves, and we were ourselves the whole year. I think he saw that. I think we built a trust.
That's the brains behind the Raptors. Masai Ujiri did a remarkable job this year in bringing an NBA championship there. Kawhi Leonard did his part as well. No one's really quite sure what Kawhi wants.
Well, we talked to Brian Geltzer the other day at Hoops Critic on Twitter, and he said he wants to be close to home. He wants to win, and he wants to essentially, how did he put it? Slay super teams. Those are the three things.
Doesn't
that he
want to join
to
the teams. Geltzer said he wants to beat those.
He
teams.
Wants to destroy those monsters, and that's fine. Those are cool. Those are cool things to want. Those are reachable things for him to attain. Except for the being where you want to be, if Toronto's not a place that you want to be. I mean, we were talking about this after they won the championship, after Masai Ujiri pushed his chips to the middle and brought a championship back. They're going to hang a banner for Kawhi at some point. He's going to have played there, assuming he goes to the Clippers or somewhere not Toronto. He will have played there for one season. He will have won a championship, presumably their only one, because I don't see it happening again. And then they'll hang a banner for one season of one player. And I can't think of another scenario where it makes more sense to hang a banner for a guy like that. It's pretty incredible.
So Kevin Durant is currently in New York.
Yeah, according to Adrian Wojnarowski, Durant could be the biggest domino to move here in free agency, although I think you can make the argument Kawhi's just as big since he'll play next year and Durant likely won't. Durant's declined his $31.5 million player option. He's going to become an unrestricted free agent. Durant's business manager informed the Warriors in the recent days, is the way Wojnarowski puts it. His business manager, Durant, and Kleiman are together. Rich Kleiman are together in New York, where they've been mulling his free agency options.
And wine.
In New York.
Well, his business operations are out of New York.
Right. So
that's why the whole Knicks thing got kicked up in the first place was because Rich Kleiman moved all their business operations to New York. It's just that the Nets are maybe looking like a better fit right now.
Right. So he says that the Knicks, Nets, and Clippers are believed to be in consideration for Durant as well as the Golden State Warriors. I'm a little surprised, not remarkably surprised, but I'm a little surprised that he waived the $31.5 million option. That there's guarantee. I know you're not, and maybe I'm just being maybe a little pie in the sky on this and a little naive, but he had an opportunity to stay in a place where he was, I think, pretty clearly invested. I think reports of him being fed up with the organization or other players being fed up with his investment in the team are a little, they lack context, I think. They probably lack an understanding of what that room really needed to be to get to where it did. And it seemed to me he had an opportunity to take $31.5 million, be somewhere he's very comfortable, and rehab in a way that he could pick. He's still going to get the max deal.
He still can rehab in a way that he can pick.
No, that's true. He is still able to do that. And if it all ends in that, I guess I'll feel...
It's just who's paying for it. He's going to rehab wherever he wants to rehab with his doctors.
But he's going to get the max deal regardless. I mean,
why wouldn't... See, my whole... the entire time, I'm thinking... given an opportunity, not knowing what he's going to be when he comes back.
Yeah.
And there are some sobering comps here. An Achilles, at that stage of your career, when you're 30 and you tear an Achilles,
yep,
it's a big deal. You might be fine, but you may never quite be what you were, and you may have to reinvent yourself a little bit.
What do back-to-backs feel like? That all matters.
The multiple-year guarantee. Right. It is without question he's going to get a massive multi-year guaranteed deal, even not knowing the kind of player he's going to be.
Might not know anyway next year because there's a good chance he doesn't play at all regardless of who he signs with.
Correct, but you have a choice between 1 year and more than 1 year at similar money per. average annual value.
Well, right, but the thing is, he wouldn't be proving anything on the court as to whether he's...
That's the point. 80. That's the point. But either, look, forget all that. What I'm saying is he doesn't know, the team doesn't know, and still somebody's going to offer him, in, on the one hand, a multi-year massive deal, and over here it's 1 year.
Right, but and it's mind you, it's probably a pittance of difference overall. If he waits the 1 year, the cap's going to go up. It's projected like another $7-8 million. So since those max contracts are based on percentages, the money goes up another year. So I mean, I still think he's doing the right thing by, you know, if he's going to go now. But still, that's at least something to bring up that would bring the value up if he waited another year.
Yeah, for me, it would be a no-brainer to say if I'm already incurring all this risk coming back from this. Yeah. If I can eliminate one risk of wherever it's going to be, of knowing that I'm going to be in this place X under contract for this many years and guaranteed this much money, I'm going to lock that in.
Well, I guess the other thing, and maybe I'm just a worrywart when it comes to this, but what if the rehab doesn't go perfectly? You know, what if the rehab has a setback in it? What if you tear? What if you Jake Berger yourself while you're out there mowing your lawn and you rip an Achilles again? Like, I guess you'd start to worry about that kind of thing. Sure. I don't know if I'd worry about that exactly if I wasn't wearing the stupid cast and not looking rehab myself.
But one worry about the Achilles, one worry, especially for weekend warrior athletes, is when one goes, is the other ready to go? Because some,
really, that's
sure,
a thing too.
Sure, because
the wear and tear is just fairly similar.
Sometimes your body just decides that it's reached its point of elasticity, and now you're just not as elastic as you were. And if you keep stressing out those muscles with those movements, you know, one pops, maybe the other one's going
to
pop.
I don't mean to state the obvious, but getting old sucks.
Tell me about it.
What is what the hell?
Yeah.
Why doesn't anyone?
The other thing to keep in mind with Durant though is that he clearly likes the social interaction, the being part of the group, part of the team. So I know Danny said he'll rehab with the same people no matter what team he goes to. That might not necessarily be the case.
He doesn't have his own people?
I'm sure he does, but they could operate within the confines of whatever facility is of whichever team he signs with, as opposed to doing it closer to his house, wherever it is, even if he's not supposed to be, even if he's not going to play that year. Like, let's say, for sake of argument, him and Kyrie go to Brooklyn. He's probably going to want to be part of that ecosystem and get to be, if nothing else, part of the culture and get into that early, because what was the thing he probably disliked the most about being part of the Warriors was it being the Warriors and Kevin Durant.
Sure.
This time he wants to be part of whatever the team is. So if it's the Nets or the Knicks, Kevin Durant is part of that, and it's not the Nets / Knicks, comma Kevin Durant. He's made it known that that's something that has that kind of matters to him, that he was annoyed with this year with the Warriors.
That's going to be an uphill climb for him because he's not going to play. I mean, I think you're right. I think setting that dynamic within the confines of whatever organization he chooses is probably important to him. But from the outside, from our perspective, whenever he gets added into that, like actually onto the court for whatever that team is, that comma, like you said, Rick, is going to still be there. I don't know what he's going to be able to do to knock that thing out of there from the outside perspective.
Well, let's not forget his role in influencing a team's moves in general. He isn't just a player choosing a team. As all these dynamics work, he is going to be involved in the recruitment of another player. And I was sort of putting myself in that position. If you're the other max guy expected to go with Durant and you want to know his level of buy-in and you want to know how healthy he is, you know, what am I signing on for? If I think I'm going to go compete for a championship, I have to be sold on the fact that enough of Kevin Durant is going to come back to make it worth my while, or maybe I'm going to take a different offer. You know,
but that's been the whole thing with Kyrie. Is everybody's like, Kyrie is so sold on Brooklyn. If it's Brooklyn, is it sure is they're the betting favorite at this point for Kevin Durant? Kyrie's pretty much already invested. It's almost like Kyrie is helping to sell Kevin Durant as much as if Kevin Durant went somewhere else, he would have to be the one doing the selling. Like, if that happened, that's your package deal. That's your two guys. That's what they have room for. And they already have some of their other guys that are still able to stay around. So at that point, that team is pretty well set. So he wouldn't have to do any selling.
What a shift in dynamic, though. I mean, from going to, I mean, you see the way the season ended for Kyrie Irving, where everybody is looking at him going, eh, I'm not really interested in having that guy lead a franchise.
Didn't look like he wanted to compete. That was the issue. Is it
bailed?
When you start hitting at the essence of what they do for a living, and you start asking those questions, you know, that's the thing with me, that if I'm looking at all of these guys and my level of trust, I don't doubt Kyrie's talent. Guy's magnificent.
Of course not.
Guy's all-time handles, tremendous talent. And I know that Jimmy Butler is still, for the most part, a really valuable player, despite getting older and having a lot of hard miles on him.
That's true.
There's something about Jimmy I don't like, and I don't trust it. I don't want to give a ton of money to, because he doesn't make situations better necessarily where he goes. And there are people who love him, and that's fine. But if I, as an exec, I've got big red flags on both Kyrie and Jimmy Butler when you're talking about committing that kind of wealth.
Which is why when I read the Houston-Jimmy Butler connection, the rumors that are swirling around that the Rockets are interested in reaching out to Jimmy Butler this offseason.
Okay.
I'd watch the hell out of that team, because the explosions coming out of there. I mean, you know how that with Harden and Paul and if that's, I mean, I don't even, they're not going to trade Chris Paul. That contract's not moving anywhere.
No, and now we're finding out
the
breaking news that the coexistence of James Harden and Chris Paul might have not been the blissful existence that we thought it probably was.
No kidding.
The bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the 17th-ranked Cats this fall at Ryan Field. Matchups include Ohio State, Michigan State, and Iowa. Single-game tickets on sale now at nusports.com. 773 says, does Kyrie going to Brooklyn make D'Angelo Russell available? He's restricted.
If Kyrie signed there, he'd be available. They'd probably renounce his rights.
I'm in.
Lakers?
Bulls.
Head back?
Bulls.
How are you opening up the space? Because they don't have enough money.
Getting rid of everybody.
D'Angelo Russell's getting a max contract.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Well, I mean, that wasn't a sure thing going into this year. He's had, what, 2/3 of a really good season? That's it?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but we've talked about this, but like the max money doesn't mean you're on the same tier as everyone else getting the max money. And
what about the Max Muncy?
Max Muncy? Yeah, well, no, he gets max money. You can do that for sure.
D'Angelo Russell would then tell Zach LaVine to go get it out of the ocean, because he's going to be somewhere else. Because you can't play those two guys together, I don't think.
Wouldn't. I'm glad that we got the reinforcement over this week with whether it was the Down Low podcast or other places too, this idea that there are no untouchables for the Bulls right now. It just feels, though, that conversation is yet. It feels like, all right, yeah, we might, you know, could explore maybe moving somebody, and then that conversation stops there. At least that's the perspective from outside.
They want it
in
both ways. They want to be seen as aware and flexible enough to know that the best player on their championship team is probably not here yet, but it's in their nature to fall in love with what's in front of them, be it their players, their coaches, anything in the organization. It is the nature of this organization to overvalue its own things forever.
Yeah.
Forever they've done
Speaking
that.
Speaking of the opposite of that, it was brought up that the Lakers traded D'Angelo Russell to, along with Mozgov, to free up cap room that now could very realistically end up being used on D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Wow. A reunion is in the making.
Because nobody that was really mad at him is there anymore. Really, nobody when he was there is there anymore. It was really just, you know, it was what, Nick Young that was really that mad at D'Angelo Russell? And outside of that, the roster is now completely turned over because there pretty much isn't one.
I love this league.
It's fantastic.
I really do. I love this league. Hey, when we come back, I want to take a look. The Washington Nationals, I don't know if you saw this. They're about to do something really, really cool.
They're going to make Adam Eaton read a book?
No, I didn't say they were going to do the impossible. But no, they're going to do something cool, and it's the kind of thing that makes me wish a longtime, well-known score caller was still with us.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll get to that when we come back. Lawrence Holmes coming up in transition in just a few. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Bernstein and McKnight here on Sports Radio 670 The Score. We're on 9 to noon. And by the way, noon today, it's going to be Joe Madden on with Lawrence Holmes. They had to move him a day. He returns back to his regularly scheduled Tuesday times, what we always call Joe Day, after this. It's just a one-off. And the bottom of the hour is sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure, still, or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, No sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint, mouthwatering water. You remember Gary from Evanston, one of the great,
of course,
the great Expos fans of all time. He found himself just devoted to his beloved Montreal Expos. He carried around a stuffed animal of the mascot Yuppie, whom he adored. Gary was a wonderful guy and the winner of our all-time Who You Crappin' World Championships when we were down in Beverly. McNally? Is that where we were? Well, guess what the Washington Nationals are doing? Because if you didn't know, the Washington Nationals are the Expos.
Yeah, it used to be the Expos.
The Expos moved to Washington to become the Nationals. Maybe you're a young baseball fan and did not know that. Well, on July 6th, the Nationals are going to do a 1969 throwback day.
Yes.
When they host the Kansas City Royals.
Yes.
They are going to wear Montreal Expos throwback uniforms, the powder blue away jerseys and pants. So not just any Expos stuff, not the pinstripes, not the all whites.
One of the greatest uniforms in baseball history.
The powder blues.
Oh, my.
The Royals. That's awesome. The Royals were also an expansion team in 69. That was the year Lou Piniella was a rookie.
That's right.
And just some great stories there, because I know another guy on that team was Tom Bergmeier, who told me stories about Lou as a rookie. Just hilarious. So we had to go to balance beam, and Lou kept falling off.
Well,
and he was rookie of the year, I believe. They're going to wear throwback versions of their original road gray uniforms also, featuring Kansas City in blue script. But there's more than that. It's going to extend to the ballpark musical selections with, well, 1969 was a great summer for music. The Expos stylized M, it's an M-E-B for Montreal Expos Baseball.
Right, right, right.
That's going to replace the Nationals' curly W for a day. The Nationals will offer several specialty food items. They're going to offer poutine, and they're going to offer Montreal-style smoked meat sandwiches with mustard on a rye roll. And Vlad Guerrero Sr. is going to be there. How about that?
The 1969 Expos were 52-110 in their first season. So they're celebrating the uniform more than anything else. Can you name who led the 1969 Expos in wins above replacement?
Oh, God. Was it John Bacabella?
Decent guess. Rusty. It's Rusty Staub.
Rusty Staub, La Grande Orange.
Yeah. Was the man.
I should have known that. Outstanding. Yeah, I always loved the colors, loved the hat, and they were good for a while. The Tim Raines, Gary Carter Expos were a really, really good team.
This will make the Jonah Carey Friday visit a very fun one and very excited. It'll be breathless, like always.
Yeah, he's...
I love Jonah.
And you said you have been to Montreal?
I have. I've been to Montreal. I was in that old stadium. I watched the 2003 Marlins beat the 2003 Expos. Dontrell Willis pitched, and Michael Barrett let a fastball get by him. It knocked out the home plate umpire, and the game was stalled for the better part of 20 minutes.
He let it get by him, and he knocked him out?
He went down. Barrett went down to block a breaking ball. Didn't throw breaking ball. Fastball hit the umpire, home plate umpire, in the mask. It knocked him out for 20 minutes, and we went to go get another Molson dry.
Quick reminder to you, as I see Nick Shepkowski and Danny Parkins walk across as they arrive in the building today, the McNeil and Parkins show has brought back the charity golf outing at Seven Bridges Golf Club. It's going to be August 5th. You can enjoy a day of golf with your friends, your favorite score personalities, the score personalities you can't stand, and local celebrities. All of it benefits Turning Point Autism Foundation. So buy your foursome before it sells out.
It's going to be awesome.
It's really going to be a great day. We're going to be broadcasting from there. Always looking forward to the great folks out there at Seven Bridges and everybody involved with Turning Point. Visit 670thescore.com/golfouting. Now, 670thescore.com/golfouting. We're going to say good afternoon to Lawrence Holmes next. Keep it here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.